All right. Good afternoon, folks. My name is Mike Kasich. I'm from Carnegie Mellon. I had to take my name tag off for the microphone, but if you could see it, it would say that I'm a grant recipient. So thank you to Usenix and sponsors for that. And I know that I'm going to have to try to keep this talk entertaining because I'm fighting food coma. So we'll see what we can do about that. So today, I'm going to talk about doing black box problem diagnosis in parallel file systems. So there's really sort of two goals of this work. Sort of the primary goal is to diagnose problems in an off-the-shelf parallel file system. And in particular, we're talking about environmental performance problems, things that are the result of poorly performing disk and network resources. And in particular, the file systems that we're targeting for this work is PBFS and Lustre, which I'll go into a little bit more detail in a moment. But the secondary and perhaps more general goal of this work is to develop methods for problem diagnosis that are applicable to existing deployments. And in particular, the features that we feel are important to achieve this would be application transparency, minimizing overheads, costs of instrumentation, training, configuration, things like that. We'd also would like to be able to support arbitrary workloads so that you don't have to worry about things like workload models, SLOs, things like that. So before I get into the meat of the talk, I just want to take a moment to sort of motivate why it is that we chose to look at this subject and in particular the problems that we actually spent time with. Our motivation comes from real problem anecdotes from the PVFS developers who also run a fairly large PVFS cluster at Argonne National Laboratory. And for them, the one thing that they're sort of really concerned about is what we call limping but alive server problems. And this is a sort of situation where the system is operating correctly, right? There's no errors reported. You can't identify any faults in the system through logs, but it's not operating to the level of performance that they would expect. And this is, more importantly, they find that a single faulty server in their system, so a server that has a bad disk or something like that, will actually impact the overall system performance. And this is doubly bad, right? So this is bad in part because this means that one slow node makes everybody slow, but it's also bad because that means that your most obvious way of figuring out which the bad node in the system is, perhaps looking at like bandwidth or throughput or something like that, doesn't actually tell you anything because everybody looks the same. So in particular, the storage-related problems that they're interested in would be, for example, accidental launch of rogue processes on file servers, which would create decreased throughput, or a particular example is a buggy RAID controller that might, for example, issue patrol reads to proactively scan the surface of a disk for sector errors, but to do so when the system's not actually idle, thus creating contention and slow performance. The network-related problems that they're interested in include, say, faulty switch ports, which would corrupt packets and fail CRC checks, or overloaded switches that would drop packets when you're running the file system, but that if you take the switch offline and run diagnostic tests on it, everything looks okay. So sort of keeping those problems in mind, I'll talk about our problem diagnosis work and what we've been able to do thus far. I'll introduce parallel file systems and some insights about them that we use for problem diagnosis. Then I'll talk about the problem diagnosis experiments that we ran ourselves, our algorithms for diagnosing problems, results, and a conclusion. So as I mentioned earlier, our target file systems are PVFS and Lustre. These are both open source parallel file systems that are used largely in the high performance computing circles. They both aim to support I/O intensive applications by providing high bandwidth concurrent access to files in the system. So the architecture of a parallel file system consists of a large number of clients, say hundreds, thousands, and a fair number of servers, say tens to 100s. Servers typically have two roles, either act as an I/O or a data server role, or as a metadata role, or in some cases these can actually be combined. But sort of the key insight about parallel file systems is that clients will actually communicate with every file server, often within the same request, and yet at the same time, servers tend not to communicate with each other directly. They tend to be isolated entities. So in particular, the crucial feature about parallel file systems, why they're important, is what they do is they allow you to take a relatively basic workload pattern, say sequential I/O or end-to-one strided I/O, and actually parallelize it across servers. And the way that it does this is it will take a logical file that you're writing and stripe that file into blocks or chunks of, say, 64 kilobytes to 1 megabyte in size, and it writes each one of these chunks round robin to physical files located on each file server. And as it turns out that this is an important feature for I/O parallelism in scientific computing for checkpointing, but it's also an important feature for us to be able to do problem diagnosis. So our first empirical insight about parallel file systems is that server behavior is the same for most requests. Now, if this was a replicated system where we were actually replicating data blocks across servers, this would sort of be a given. Here, we're not actually replicating the data blocks. It is different data that's going to each server. But the parameters of those requests are basically the same across them. And in particular, if you have a large I/O request, one that would actually span across all servers, then it gets striped across all of them, and the requests are the same. And if you have small requests, ones that touch a very small file, it might only go to one server. But if you have enough of these requests in aggregate, you'll still equally load all servers. So our hypothesis here is of peer similarity, the idea that fault-free I/O servers should exhibit similar performance metrics, whereas faulty I/O servers should exhibit dissimilarities in at least certain performance metrics. And if we actually look at the behavior of these metrics across all servers in the systems, we should be able to figure out which guy is the odd man out and thus identify the problem. So here is an example of a disk hog fault injected into one of our systems. And I'll just take a moment to sort of explain this plot. This is an experiment that we ran that was about 10 minutes long. And there's 10 I/O servers in the system, but their throughput behavior, this is disk throughput, is so tightly coupled that this blue line that you see for the majority of the plot, it consists of actually 10 or 9 servers superimposed completely on top of each other. And about a quarter of the way through the experiment, it's when we have a fault introduced into the system that one of these servers actually deviates in its performance and does something different. So we can look at this peer asymmetry between metric plots and try to figure out, okay, well, which server in the system is that in faulty? And this motivates our peer comparison approach. So there's a second insight that we have about parallel file systems, and that is faults manifest asymmetrically only on certain metrics. So for example, if we have a disk busy fault in the system, you would see that it manifests asymmetrically on a latency metric, this being the wait time of an I/O request. You would see it increase on the faulty server and potentially decrease on the fault-free servers. But if we look at something like disk throughput, we see that the manifestation, although it is present, is symmetric across all the servers. So while we can intuitively say that we know a fault exists in the system because of this change in performance, we can't look between the servers and actually pick up upon that fact. We would have to make some sort of characterization of the workload to actually say that there was a fault in the system in this example. So the point here is that knowing that certain faults are asymmetric only in certain metrics and not others, we actually might be able to distinguish these faults from each other based on which of these metrics are peer divergent. So now I'll talk about our system and our experiments. So our fault model here is non-fail-stop problems, specifically the subset of limping but alive performance problems that affect the systems and problems affecting storage and network resources. Our assumptions, we assume that hardware is homogeneous and identically configured. Now, it's important to say that in the HPC community, homogeneity of hardware is very much a deliberate point, that the people who run HPC systems go out of their way to make sure that the hardware that they're running on is largely identical, both in configuration and in components, and that things are matched together. But the truth is that our own experimental cluster is not that well matched. We find that some of our disks perform up to 5 megabytes slower in throughput than other disks. So as it turns out, while we have this assumption of homogeneity, we can relax it a bit at the cost of maybe masking some lower level faults. We also assume that workloads are non-pathological. That is, you can construct a workload that will thwart our fault detection mechanism based on exploiting behaviors of parallel file systems to force all the IOs to one machine. Fortunately, however, you almost have to be deliberate to do this, that the majority of workloads that we're concerned about, particularly sequential or end-to-one IO patterns, don't have this property. And we also assume that the majority of our servers are exhibiting fault-free behavior. For instrumentation, we sample storage and network performance metrics, specifically operating system level performance metrics that we capture from the /proc virtual file system once every second. And we gather these metrics from all server nodes. The storage related metrics that we're interested in are throughput in terms of bytes read and written a second, and latency in terms of the wait time of an IO request. The network related metrics of interest for us are, again, throughput, either bytes received or transmitted a second, and also network congestion in the form of the TCP sending congestion window. The workloads that we were using for our experiments, we used DD in a read and write capacity to read or write many gigabytes to a or from a file within the virtual file system. This is a large order IO requests. It's a saturating workload. We also run IOZone, which is another large IO request workload. It differs from DD a little bit in that there's a workload transition, there's a reread and a rewrite phase, and an fsync. And finally, the last workload that we use for our experiments is Postmark, which, you know, maybe sounds a little bit curious at first. This is a metadata-heavy workload, small reads and writes, trying to actually emulate the behavior of an email or a news server. But we figured it was worth throwing at the system to see how well could our problem diagnosis mechanism actually diagnose problems in a system that looked really different from the one that we're initially targeting. The fault types that we're interested in sort of can be characterized in two different dimensions. The first dimension is which resources in our system are susceptible to slow performance. And for us, we're concerned about storage in the form of access contention to the disk and network, be either network congestion or possibly packet loss from faulty hardware. The second dimension that we look at faults in the system is the manifestation mechanism. And here, I categorize things into one of two things. We either have a hog-type fault in the system in which we introduce a new visible workload into the system that we can see directly from our server performance metrics. That is to say, in the absence of anything actually going on at the file server, we would still see disk throughput or network throughput from these workloads that we introduce. The second category is a busier loss category. And here, we have an agent in the system that doesn't so much necessarily introduce a new workload, but alters the behavior of an existing workload, at least with respect to the metrics that we analyze. And so an example would be a packet loss condition, where there's not new packets going through the system, but rather the packets that are going to the file server from the clients are being altered. So if we take these two dimensions of faults, we can actually construct four general categories of fault, and from them, six faults we actually inject into the system. We have, for storage, a disk hog and a disk busy fault. And for network, we have a read and write network hog and a receive and send packet loss faults. The experiments that we ran, we used four different clusters, two of which were Lustre and two of which were PBFS. The PBFS and Lustre clusters were similarly configured, 10 clients and 10 IO servers, which I understand is a bit weak in the numbers, is the best that we could do with, or 6 clients and 12 IO servers. The difference between PBFS and Lustre is that in PBFS, the IO servers and the metadata servers are shared on the same nodes. In Lustre, they have a dedicated metadata server for the cluster. We run each of our client workloads for about 10 minutes. We inject a fault on a single server for about 5 minutes. And then we run all these workload and fault combinations 10 times using a different server in the system to inject the fault on. Okay, so the algorithm that we use for problem diagnosis really consists of two phases. The first phase of our algorithm is the node indictment phase, that is, figuring out that there is a problem in the system and on what node that problem resides. We use two different approaches for doing this, one of which is a histogram-based approach that we use from the majority of our metrics, and the other one, which I will not talk about at length in this talk, is a time series-based approach that we use only for the congestion window. But the key point here is that both of these approaches use peer comparison to indict the faulty node in the system. The second phase of our problem diagnosis is the root cause analysis phase. And what we do here, and I'll elaborate about this more in a minute, but essentially we figure out which of these metrics show up as faulty in our node indictment phase, and then using those metrics, we match them up and we figure out, okay, well then what's actually the problem that's going on? So describing sort of as an illustration the node indictment phase, what we do is we peer compare histograms of a particular metric across each server in our system. So if we have, say, 4 servers in the system, and this is a single metric for a window of time, say 60 seconds, there's a histogram for each server. And what we do is we first walk around and we compute the Kullback-Leibler divergence for each pair of histograms in our servers. And so since we have four servers here, we have eight histogram pairs that we generate. And what the divergence gives us is it gives us a number that says how different these histograms are from each other, or more generally, how different in behavior are these two servers from each other. Then what we do is we walk around again, and we flag a particular pair of servers as being anomalous if the divergence between them exceeds a particular threshold. So in this particular example, with these histograms, we see that all of the server pairs that involve the upper left-hand server there have anomalous divergences between them. And finally, then what we do is we flag a particular server as being anomalous if more than half of its histogram pairs have been flagged anomalous. And for the remaining servers, since they have fewer than half of their histogram pairs as being anomalous, then we consider those to be fault-free. Now, it's important when talking about this histogram-based method for indicting nodes that we do have a threshold here. And the way that we choose our threshold is through a fault-free training session, which you can think of as being done as part of a stress test of your system. The idea here for us is that we run a subset of our workloads, 3 out of 5, under fault-free conditions on all of our servers, and figure out the minimum threshold if we run all that data through that analysis I just talked about that eliminates all anomalies in the system. If you were to run this on a production system, what you would do is you would just collect this data as part of your standard stress testing procedure, run the most stressful or difficult workloads that you have against your system. And the reason why this works is because we find that the performance metrics across the servers differ the most when the system is under the most load, when it's the most saturated. And when you have more intermittencies in your workload or if they're less stressful, then they actually have better coupling between these metrics. And so you don't actually need as high of a threshold. Therefore, the point here is a threshold in the worst case. So before I go on to explain the second part of our problem diagnosis method, I just want to take a moment to go back and to show you that plot that I originally showed you at the beginning of the talk. Now, earlier I said that faults only influence certain metrics, and as a general trend, we see that latency metrics tend to be influenced by any sort of fault relevant to that particular resource, so a disk fault would influence disk latency metrics in every case. But that throughput metrics aren't necessarily influenced. And the reason is because when you have, for example, a disk hog, or if it was a network hog fault or something like that in the system, you would find that the throughput of your file server, in this case PVFS, would always decrease across all of your nodes. But what the operating system performance metric tells you is not just the throughput of PVFS, but the throughput of all processes running on that node. And so on the faulty node, what we actually see is the sum of the throughput of both PVFS as well as the disk hog process. So that's the reason why if we have a server monitored metric, we actually see this deviation then in disk throughput. So if we sort of do that kind of analysis on each of our sets of faults and all of our metrics, we can actually build a table of the metrics and the faults that affect them. So for storage throughput, we see that it's affected by the disk hog. For storage latency, disk hog and disk busy. And for network throughput, network congestion correspondingly. From this table, we can then derive a checklist that then maps the set of divergent metrics to a root cause. And in doing so, we infer the resource responsible for the fault, as well as the mechanism by which the resource faulted. So here's our checklist. We see if we have a pure divergence of storage throughput, then we say we have a disk hog fault. If it's storage latency, then we say it's a disk busy fault. For network throughput, it's most likely a network hog fault. Although there is a caveat here in certain instances in which packet loss, because of delayed acts, can actually generate a change in network throughput. So we have to be careful about that. And finally, for network congestion, if we see a pure divergence there, then we say it's a packet loss fault. So, as I said, we ran a bunch of these experiments, and we ran our fault injectors and collected data and then analyzed this. And this is the results of our experiments for a single cluster. Now, let me take a moment to sort of explain what's going on here. We're looking at the result of a single cluster for each fault type. That's the x-axis. The y-axis is their accuracy rate in terms of do we get a true positive from our problem diagnosis agent, or do we get a false positive? Now, the true positives and false positives can still be categorized in one of two ways. We have indicted true positive, in which our problem diagnosis agent said that the server that it fingerpointed was, in fact, the correct server that was faulty. And then we have diagnosed true positive, which says not only do we diagnose a correct server, but we are also able to diagnose the correct root cause as well. Indicted false positive means that we were unable to identify even the right server. We got the wrong server. We picked the wrong guy. Whereas diagnosed false positive means that we actually diagnosed the right server, but the wrong reason. So those are the four different ways that we look at our results, and we have a bar for each one of our fault types. If we look at this, we actually see that the true positive scores, which are the left two columns for each fault, are generally speaking fairly good and fairly consistent across fault types, with the exception of the packet loss faults. And what's going on here is that in most of our experiments, we only, I shouldn't say most, for all of our packet loss experiments, we only inject packet loss on one side of the network link. And at the same time, most of our workloads only exercise one side of the network link. So if we have the workload going in one direction and we have the packet loss going the other direction, the only packets that are being dropped are ACKs, and as long as a few ACKs can get through, then there's no degradation in throughput. So it turns out that we only diagnose those about half the time, but they only actually show a performance degradation about half the time. So as it turns out, we actually diagnose those faults fairly well as well. If we look at our results aggregated across our four different cluster types, we actually see that our false positive rates are slightly inconsistent, that the Lustre 6 client 12 server cluster saw more false positives than the other ones. We also see that our true positive rates are very much inconsistent, that while three of the four clusters have similar scores, one of them doesn't. And what's going on here is actually fault masking. So it turns out that the algorithm that I described here is actually somewhat sensitive to imprecise thresholds. And we have imprecise thresholds because we can only generate them based on fault-free data. It's an approximation of to what degree do we ever see servers exhibiting worst-case behavior for fault-free workloads. And while those thresholds are good for telling us when we don't have a fault in the system, when we do have a fault in the system, those thresholds have a more difficult time actually differentiating between them. So one of the things that we're thinking of now is, well, if we don't necessarily use this binary is faulty or is not faulty, if we see one or more metrics exceed its threshold, then maybe what we should do is actually then try to rank these metrics based on the degree of dissimilarity between them or something like that. But in general, the strategy is promising, and one important point here is that our instrumentation overhead is less than a 1% increase in workload runtime, which means it's negligible. So for the future, I would like to improve our analysis, diagnosis accuracy rate to make our analysis more robust and precise thresholds. Actually, the big thing I really want to do here is deploy this problem diagnosis strategy on a production system and actually start collecting real-world data. You know, we've worked this technique out in the lab. It appears to work well for our initial experiments. But what we really want to know is how well does this actually flesh out problems on real workloads, on a real system at scale. We'd also like to expand our coverage, our target problem classes, consider other sources of performance and non-performance faults, and expand our instrumentation to include additional black box metrics, possibly actually go at the RPC level between file servers and start sniffing requests and tracing those. So in summary, problem diagnosis and parallel file systems, we were able to illustrate the use of operating system level performance metrics to diagnose problems. In doing so, we were able to leverage peer comparison to identify faulty nodes. And we were also able to demonstrate root cause analysis by looking at the metrics affected. And this is a method that's applicable to existing deployments. The instrumentation is minimally invasive, therefore it's a low overhead, and the training that's required to do this is fault-free and can be done just by running simple stress tests on your system. Okay, and I'll take questions.
Do we have any questions? Do you want to step up to the microphone? Well, in the meantime, I'll ask one. Can you comment on how well your methodology might scale to the level that it's going to need to scale for the big installations that are more than 10 and 12 servers, especially because you're using a pairwise algorithm?
You mean the scaling in terms of computation, the complexity of it?
Well, in both, but yes.
Okay, well, in terms of complexity, it is an n squared algorithm. The back of the envelope calculations that we've done on our unoptimized algorithm says we can support up to clusters with 88 servers on a single 2.4 gigahertz core. But another thing that we can do here is we don't actually need to evaluate every pair of servers. We only have to evaluate a subset of them at a time. And so if we had, say, a 100-node system, we could break that into 10 groups of 10 nodes, do the pairs between them, which is an O of N algorithm. And as long as we change our pair assignments somewhat frequently, then we should be able to diagnose with the same degree of insight as with the N squared algorithm. In terms of how well do the results scale up, that's hard for me to say without actually having done it. I can't make claims without validation, so.
John Bent, Los Alamos. Yeah. One of the things that we see in our very much larger scale parallel systems is that our workloads will tend to hit just a subset of the disks at any one time. And it looks like you're assuming that the workload is homogeneous across all of the disks. So I'm wondering, you know, does your training have sort of sensitivity for the amount of time that it takes for the workload to become homogeneous across all of the disks?
Well, right now we are assuming, well, for this particular version of the work, we're assuming that the workloads are distributed in the manner that you describe. For PBFS, that's the case. For Lustre, that's the case if you configure it that way, if you enable that striping. Now, I believe you guys are running PANFS, which would be a little bit different. And so what I would say to do that level of work, what you would hope is that you hit only a certain set of disks at a time, but that over time, the behavior on each of the disks that you hit should be roughly similar to each other. So if you take the metrics from all the nodes and you actually translate them in time so you can superimpose the metrics on top of each other and then actually look at them that way, you might then be able to figure out which ones deviate from the rest of them, like so.
Sarparov from Oak Ridge National Lab. Actually, John stole my question, but we have more than 100 servers, close to 200 servers in our Lustre file system, and at any given time, you don't see homogeneity on the I/O server load.
All right.
Not in terms of performance or disk latency or anything at all. Your technique seems to be well suited for maintenance window, non-invasive type of measurements. I don't see how this can be successfully deployed in a production system, which we totally support something like that if it can be developed.
Which file system, out of curiosity?
Lustre.
Say what?
Lustre.
Okay. So what I would say is that there's a heuristic here, right? That the heuristic is how do you differentiate between when you have a fault in the system and a change in your workload? And our heuristic right now is you do peer comparison. You make this assumption that the behavior of the workload should be the same across all the servers. And then what you'd actually then do is validate, is that the case? If you come to me and you say, well, we know it's not the case. We know that our workloads hit only some servers at a time. Then you have to modify your heuristic a bit. And if you can do the time translation that I mentioned to John, then that might be, you know, your way around it. If you can't do that and you can't model your workloads, then what you'd probably have to do is go down to the RPC layer and actually see if you can get insights as to when requests are actually going to servers and then try to match them up that way. You try to synchronize your metrics based on similarity of request type, and then you go to look to see do your performance metrics match up.
Arkady Konevsky, MC. I have one question. The results you presented seem to be targeted toward the data stores. What about, but in the original model, you presented both metadata as well as data stores. How did you, do you have any results on the metadata which might not exhibit the same uniformity of the data distribution across the metadata servers?
Sure. I think I have two different ways I can answer that briefly. First of all, our single cluster results were for PVFS, and in this case, we don't actually distinguish between the I/O and the metadata servers. So in particular for Postmark, which is a very metadata-heavy workload, this is actually a comparison of this is actually an analysis of our technique against differences in metadata workloads. Now, the truth is that in PBFS, you actually do have metadata hotspots. Here we go. So this is the network throughput of our servers for the Postmark, which is a metadata-heavy workload. And as you can see, they don't perfectly match up as I showed you in earlier plots. And one of the reasons for this is because PBFS locates an entire directory on a single metadata server. So all of your path lookups have to go through root. So whichever file server has root on it, that's the one that gets hit the most often. Now, right now, we don't make any special assumptions for that in our analysis. All we can do is just say, well, problems in the system have to manifest at a higher degree than the worst case of one server being a hotspot. So if a different server were to develop and become a hotspot, we would pick up on that. But I believe that this technique could be moved further along to come up with special cases for these sort of metadata hotspots if you wanted to look into that.